Welcome to The Scene. I'm your host, Andrea Kruska, and today I'm joined by David Fricke. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Why don't you start off just giving us a little bit of background on what you do and how you got started?
I'm a sculptor here in Cookeville. I kind of got started in all of that. Sort of at a younger age, I started out as a photography major when I was in college, and worked really hard at that and really enjoyed sort of making photographs, but all kind of on the physical end of things, sort of darkroom photography, that kind of thing. And, had some issues with my schooling, as a lot of people do. So I fired my university after a little while and, started working as a carpenter, and a cabinet maker's apprentice, and, did a lot of woodworking for years and started assisting some glass blowers at a different school, started making tools for them, decided that I wanted to go back to school to actually make things. And so I started studying sculpture at the Massachusetts College of Art and Design, and got introduced to all kinds of different materials and realized that I really loved combining metal, wood, and glass, and sort of hit the ground running and never looked back.
I like that you fired your university.
I feel like we all need to phrase things a little bit better for our conscience.
Yes, I think I was fired myself by two universities is what I was going through.
No shame, no judgment.
And actually, no, one of the ones that I just dropped out of was I was doing photography there, and the same thing, darkroom photography. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of one of those things that's pretty common, like, as artists, we really like working with our hands. And so, like, in the dark room, you have that. And now I'm seeing it's like doing all digital. I kind of miss that.
Yeah. Even though I kind of left photography, and I taught photography, darkroom work at a place called the Elliott School in Jamaica Plains, Massachusetts. And I loved it, kind of, you know, introducing all the sort of, you know, darkroom, the chemicals, the different materials to print on, all of that. Once it became really obvious that I was going to continue, if I was going to continue with photography, I would have to, do much more digital work or invest a whole lot more time in the artistry and the advertisement of it all. I kind of just lost touch with it, though I still have all of my darkroom equipment. I can't quite get rid of that.
Well, who could? It's like I still have my manual cameras from the 70s. Like, yeah. And I'll never get rid of those. They're, mm-hmm. They're heirlooms for me at this point. So you started working in metal and wood and glass, and we've seen, of course, your work all over town. What are some of your favorite projects you've worked on?
Well, I guess it would be kind of easy just to sort of say all of them. It's a cop out. I know. I can say that because I don't have that many. I mostly do sort of large scale projects. And so most of the time a project is going to take me at least 6 months to finish. For a long time I was only doing about one thing a year. I've loved building the bench that's down by the depot. That was a lot of fun, combining some of the woodwork and the steel fabrication and the iron casting, which is sort of my favorite little bit of everything. The aluminum castings at Father Tom's was a really wonderful way to get to know folks around the university, especially in the engineering department's foundry there. And more recently, the tree in Dogwood Park became kind of an all-consuming project for a year, and so I feel very, very attached to that one. Every project has brought its own bit to the table. The nice thing about doing sculpture work is that you never really end up making the same thing twice. So each project is sort of different and creates its own space, its own mental and emotional hazards, its own attachments.
Well, and of course, the people who see all these things, especially the tree, they're all going to have their own attachments and everything to it.
Absolutely.
Which I think is one of the really cool things about doing work the way you do.
Yeah.
Because it's like they go to that bench and they're like, oh, I can sit down and like eat lunch or whatever and just be attached in different ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll be right back on The Scene with more with David Fricke. Welcome back to the scene. I'm talking to David Fricke today and about to go into some of your upcoming projects. So what are you working on?
Once the tree was completed, I had a sort of backlog of projects I needed to catch up on. I've been working on some, the bronze casting definitely hasn't stopped. So I've been working on some pieces for businesses in town. I just wrapped up some steel fabrication pieces, 14-foot long bar with a bunch of sort of marbled rust patina work on it. And that was going into the space across from Soulcraft.
42 West Broad.
Oh, yeah. That's the one. I actually, that was the largest epoxy pour I've ever done. And I'm usually not a big fan of that. But on top of the steel, it actually, I was kind of giddy about it. aside from that, I've been just trying to branch out into all kinds of different projects. I'm trying to develop a better relationship with the American Foundry Society student group over at Tech. That's an engineering student group focused on Foundry. They wanted to cast some rings for their group and wanted to do it in a different way. And I work in a kind of specific type of Foundry format. They're learning a lot of sort of oil bonded sand molds and things like that, which are usually cope and drag two part sand molds. But what I've been working in is something called ceramic shell, where essentially, everything in Foundry is making a mold of an object to make a mold of an object to make a mold of an object. So the tree itself was basically made three times over. So they were making patterns, making rubber molds of these patterns, remaking them in wax, and then coating them in a sort of ceramic slurry concoction. And then you fire that, melt out the wax, and it becomes essentially a vase. And then you pour your metal into that empty space. That was a lot of fun sort of working with them, getting to know more of how the, their education system works and their projects and their relationship to Foundry and sort of the act of making and, kind of learning the differences between the engineering perspective and the art perspective. It's been a lot of fun over the past few months.
I can imagine, because those are two fields you don't necessarily associate with each other, like very technical and very creative. Sure. And also I am now really understanding why it takes like 6 months to a year to do a project. Because, I don't know what goes into it. I know, like, you make really cool stuff.
Well, shucks. So do you.
Oh, thanks. So you're working on, you worked on the new bar. Anything you're doing for you personally?
Oh, who has time to work on themselves? I've got some designs and things I'd like to make some progress on in the future, but, once again, always tending towards working large scale. I feel like I lost a lot of the feeling in my fingertips, so I can't do nice, fine things. I gotta do big, dumb, heavy things all the time.
Yeah, but the big, dumb, heavy things are cool.
Yeah, they're pretty satisfying.
Yeah. So no interest really in doing anything smaller no time.
I've honestly tried. I feel like every time I've tried to make something of like a reasonable scale, I end up working on it more and more and think, oh, well, if I change this just a little bit, and next thing you know it's something the size of a horse.
Well, that's fine. It's like, I forget who I was talking to, but it was someone who does something with textiles, and they were talking about how they were trying to do like some smaller things. So when you go to markets and things like that, not everyone wants to buy like a quilt and carry around a $300 quilt. But they'll want like little squares for like pot holders or whatever.
Oh, for sure.
But they kept having that problem where they were like, oh, but this pot holder would look really cool if I put these squares with these squares, and then it would just turn into a quilt anyway.
This pot holder would look really good with these other pot holders.
Exactly. Which it makes sense to me, but lucky for me, I can go small, I can go big. You're back on the scene, and I'm here today talking to David Fricke. while you're working, I've had this question with a lot of my guests. What's your favorite thing to listen to while you work?
Ooh, okay. For the longest time, I have been very much a music-oriented person. I feel like, you know, got a little bit of the ADD going, and I kind of need that regular kind of working beat to keep me moving through. But more recently, I have started to get into podcasts and a little bit of informational stuff, but mostly, and this is the silliest thing, Dungeons and Dragons podcasts have become a very important part of my working life.
Do you play Dungeons and Dragons?
I used to a lot when I was a lot younger. I haven't in a long time, but I've kind of wanted to get back into it largely just because of all this. And it's, you know, it's never anything like serious. It's always just, you know, humorous ones and things like that. For long, drawn out, repetitive tasks, like, can't listen to it and like do something that requires thought. But if I'm just doing sort of the really tedious, time consuming things like sanding, it's a great way to get
kind
out of my
pass
head.
The time, yep. And get out of your head.
Yep.
I have a friend, and I'm not going to name names just in case this is something that would embarrass them, but they got into one of the like YouTube things where it was just people playing D&D all the time. And she was like, this is awesome. I love it. And I'm like, but you're not even playing. So a podcast about it, I feel like would be the same thing. But I mean, I like murder podcasts, so who doesn't?
I'm really glad you followed that up with podcasts.
Yeah. Make sure that pause isn't too long. But turns out listening to murder podcasts was the top choice for one of the jewelers I had on who does jewelry made from pressed flowers. Mm-hmm. So you would think those two things wouldn't necessarily go together.
I don't know. They sound like they could be pretty creepy every now and again.
And then I, like, when I'm editing, I'm either, like, I am a, give me some, like, super dramatic, like, television scores, like Game of Thrones score is perfect for that. Lord of the Rings,
absolutely.
Any of those things.
Got it on vinyl. Yeah.
Or I'm bopping along to Taylor Swift.
Great.
It just depends. It just depends.
Yeah. No, and I still need to, you know, get into music every now and again. And, you know, I find, you know, a lot of inspiration in a lot of different kinds of music for my own music and things like that. Just sort of, you know, it's gotta switch it up every now and again.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I can't do podcasts all the time. Part of it is because I start talking to them and then I get distracted and then I like completely.
Well, they become your friends and then you become really lonely realizing they're not actually there. Yeah.
It's okay though if you're listening to a podcast that is one of your friends.
Oh, that's
then,
true.
Then you can just call them and be like, hey, what are you talking about here? Where do you get some of your inspiration for what you're working on? I know obviously some of it is commissions, but it's all got your own spin on it.
I suppose so. You know, I think that there's different kinds of facets to that. So, anything that's sort of commission based, if it's not sculptural in nature, if it's more functional, I really love visual textural contrasts in very, you know, simple forms. I like mid-century modern architecture, that kind of thing. For things that get a little bit more complicated, I like repetition of forms in sort of an Art Deco kind of a way. But for my own sculptural work, I feel like I draw a lot of inspiration from sort of classic turn of the century industrial agricultural equipment, things like that. I love Industrial Revolution era. Machinery, that sort of Victorian design element that went into how we built industry is really fascinating. And in that same context, since I use a lot of text in my own work, a lot of the writing that goes into it kind of revolves around the idea of labor and wealth disparity and, you know, trying to tie that all into sort of a classic American folklore kind of a relationship.
Very interesting. Well, everyone, check it out. You can see David's work all over town, Dogwood Park, Father Tom, soon to be 42 West Broad, and many other places. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.